Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you.
Randall Rouse and Rich Bergeron.
Sure, this is the tour show, Tony Pinnacle.
And since we're doing another week, you know, sort of a tribute to Arturo Gatti, I think we should play that song since I think it's pretty clear what that woman done to him.
Yeah, so.
Thankfully, she's still in jail down there, and looks like they're taking care of her, so.
Yeah, I heard the recent updates. Know about now they're trying to investigate suicide and they didn't say what condition he was in when they found him. I've heard two conflicting reports. One said they found him in the room and you know he was just kind of there, and then another said he was banging, like he hung himself. But either way, his wife had been in the room for they had been in the ceiling for 10 hours. The other year, because she was the one that figured out the year that I was just up at the end of the day.
Okay, so latest rumor is he might be coming to the Patriots. Yeah,
good luck with that. Back to about and he ended up winning his pro debut on a second round TKO. Well, this guy, his name is Kabari Saleem, and he ended up killing a guy down, I believe it was in Missouri, a fighter named Randy Carver back in 1999. Because what he started doing, he started roughhousing Carver in there. Carver was a tall, lean guy. Saleem was coming in, using the top of his head as a battering ram again, just hit the guy with about 10 or 12 hit butts right in the face. And you could see where this guy Carver was really disoriented. And what ended up happening was he was really dead, you know, disoriented, really just staggering around. Saleem finally stopped him in like the 10th or 11th round, and Carver slipped into a coma and died. You're not scared. You got to fight intentionally dirty like that. Because, you know, when you're using the top of your head as a battering ram, you know, you're hitting somebody in the face, you're hitting them in the jaw, you're hitting them in the temples with this, you know, big noggin. You know, it's dangerous. And the Saleem ended up being a world-class fighter because he ended up getting a total shot of the Joe Calzaghe. Calzaghe built his ass. You know, Calzaghe, so he was coming in, he's up in the head of his battery, and he was running over 57 punches. You know, Calzaghe's got them, like, rat tat tat.
Yeah, he's got those huge shines down pretty good. Yeah.
So, the Saleem came out of that head, and he ran into some fist.
All right, well, let's get Goody on the phone. We're trying to get him before he shuts the place down, I guess, at 9, so.
Okay.
Hopefully he remembers.
Yeah. Hello.
Hey, Goody.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Rabble Rousing Rich. How's it going?
Rabble Rousing Rich. How you doing?
Good. I'm on the line here with Tony the Tornado Pinnacle. We were a couple guys who were supposed to box each other but never did in college, and now we did the show together.
Yeah, you
picked up on the
gym before I came here.
There you go, Tony. Next time you come up to Boston.
Okay, well, next time I come up to Boston. Goody, I'm a Philly guy, so I always tell people you gotta come down here, you know. That's right. That's right. That's right. A lot of years in South Philadelphia.
Oh,
that's good.
I'm good,
Tony. Yeah, one of the guys that I trained with, well, the one trainer at my gym was a former trainer, Matthew Saad Muhammad, but he was a world champ back in the 70s.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, Reverend Elvin Thompson, his name was, trainer.
We had some
decent, tough guys come out of my gym, so.
Yeah.
It was, I was the, for being in the South Philly gym, I was the only Italian in this particular gym, so. I went in there for the first time to get seen at a Rocky 3, you know,
Goody, Tony's a huge Rocky Marciano fan, and,
Okay,
yeah, we would love to pick your brain about, you know, growing up with him, and just tell us a little bit about that experience.
You mean Rocky Marciano?
Yeah, just know him and, you know, what he was like.
California when I retired. was coming cross country, and I think I was in Iowa. I was able with the car radio that the plane that recognized the enemy was flying and crashed and killed him, the pilot. He could not be able with a feather. And I mean, it was just terrible, you know, the tow we had killed, so, you know. And so that was quite an experience, you know, because Rocky was a great guy. Of course, he's a great fighter, but he was also a great individual. He was really a down-to-earth guy, very honest, you know.
Right. Now, you're a guy who knows, obviously, a lot about fighting styles and you know, how people fight nowadays as opposed to those days. And what do you think Rocky's secret was with such an unorthodox stance?
That old expression, I'm sure you'll agree with me, that God did not create us all equal. Let me explain that. He gave us some with a chin and some with a tickle on the chin. Some with balls and some with no balls. Put it bluntly. And living as a trainer, we can't give you a chin. We can't give you a hat. We can teach you how to fight, you know that. And if the fighters get those two qualifications, we can make a good fight right here. I like that kid that comes down the gym and gets a cut lip and a black eye and comes in the next day and says, hey, I want to box him again. That's the guy we're looking for.
Right, yeah.
They're not as hungry today, as you know, as they were years ago.
Right.
Trying to get so many obstacles in your way.
Floyd Mayweather was trying to get the white guys out of the woodwork the other day with what he said on CBS. I don't know if you caught that, but he basically said white guys can't box. There's no white guys out there dominating in boxing, so they all had to go over to MMA. And I was wondering what your reaction would be to that statement.
My grandfather, what he would do was
when Rocky was fighting, he used to cut out all the newspaper clippings. I had the clippings for the second Joe Walcott fight when he knocked him out one round.
Yeah.
And then first Desert Charles fight, the one where he won by a 15-round decision.
Yeah.
And I still have those newspaper clippings. And so, obviously, my dad, who was about 4 years old when Rocky won the title in 52, so he grew up a big Rocky Marciano fan, so that kind of, just ingrained it into me, even as a little kid. One of the jokes I always tell Rich on the show was, both my grandfather and my granduncle Eddie, they both passed away about 25 years ago. I was around 7 years old at the time. Before that is when Rocky 3 had come out, movie. And they had driven out about 6 years old, and they said, okay, it's time for me to see your dad and tell you about the great Rocky Marciano. And I was a kid, I'm kind of confused. I said, is he the guy that just Clover Lang? And so I'm one of them. I'm out of the which one smacked me in the back of the head. So I said, no, you're watching too much of this movie bullshit. We're going to tell you about real life. And they sat me down, and they said, the man could not be beaten. They said, if you put your arms up, he would just break your arm. They said, roll the stars, he broke his arm. And I was like, I'm like, wow. I'm like, this is a kid. I'm like, wow, this is impressive. I was starstruck. And then I said, even though these two gentlemen have been passed away for about 25 years now, if I dare say Rocky would lose anybody, King Kong, Godzilla, anybody, I'm afraid that I'll feel smacked up the back of my head. My great uncle went to that fight and he kept the original program and the original ticket.
Okay, yeah,
he had given it to his one son, my dad's first cousin, uncle of mine. And he was having some health problems about 10 years ago, and he was worried that if something happened to him and one of his brothers got that program, they would just sell it. And he didn't want that to happen, so he came to one of my fights up in New York, and he said, listen, he goes, I got something for you. And he goes, I know you'll appreciate this more than my brothers would and more, even than I could. So he gave me the program, he gave me the original ticket stub, and they hang in my basement gym.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, I bet
he had you beat, though, with all the stuff he's got in his gym. I went up there the other night, Tony, and I'll tell you, the stairs to go up to that place are like the stairs that Rocky has to run in the movie.
Yeah, that's a joke,
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, I needed to lose weight, and I go up there, and it's like fighting in an attic. It's on the third floor, and one of the reporters that did a story on you, Goody, mentioned that there was 44 steps on the way up there. So.
Oh,
yeah, they counted them. So
tell me.
That's So, Goody, can you give us a little perspective on, you know, some of the great fighters that you've worked with over the years, you and Pat, and just,
We started off with Tommy Tucker Alley.
Yeah.
You're
working with me now.
We had him. He was our number one man. He was the North American champion. He fought for the title. He was a great little fighter. And he could watch like you know what, but he wanted to fight like a Puerto Rican. He could watch in his bag. I guess he thought the boxing was so sick. He just walked in and bang. And of course, he did. He was a tremendous fighter. He did a great job. And Coach Marvin came up. When he was in there, but first it was Tony, then we had Coach Marvin Hagel, who was 16 years old. He walked into the gym, and you know his story. He just sat there and observed, and it seemed like yesterday. You know, I talked to him today, he looked up at me and he said, "We're not a fighter yet. That's what I'm here for." You know the rest of the story, and he was all business and trying to work, trying to play, and he was, of course, one of the greatest middleweights, if not of all time. He had the title for 7 years, you know.
Whenever anybody mentions Hagler, I always tell him he was the first boxer I ever bet on. I was must have been in fifth grade, I remember, and I bet $10 that he would beat Leonard. And everybody said they actually did, but I didn't get the win.
He beat him, but he didn't get the position, that's right.
Yeah.
Years ago, somebody had emailed me, and they were just trying to ask me some different questions about boxing. Who do you think was the best of this? Who do you think was the best of that? And the one question that came down, because when you were talking about you got Marvin Hagler, they said, who had the best chin that you've ever seen on a fighter? I said Marvin Hagler.
That's right.
Marvin Hagler had 60-plus fights in his career, and he was knocked down one time by Juan Rodan, and that was really a slip.
He wasn't knocked down, it was a slip, that's right. He wasn't knocked down, it was pushed down, that's right. They showed that over again, and they clarified that. It was not a knockdown.
And look at some of the guys, John B. Fugati.
Yeah.
The puncher. Rodan, obviously, Tommy and Van Hearns.
Yeah.
Willie Duran, even though the blown up lightweight, was still a very impressive puncher at a higher weight.
Sure.
Strong, and even had a turn his foot saver.
Yeah.
Great, he was not much of a one punch guy, but, you know, he could sting you with some shots.
Oh, yeah. Benny Briscoe, I'm good. Yeah, sure.
Benny Briscoe, a tough fighter.
Sure.
And, you know, I said, for a guy that able to stand up through all that and never really go down?
Yeah, the amateur or pro. Amateur or pro, yeah.
I said, that stands alone right there.
I said, he had a chin. I'll tell you right now, there's no question about it. Like I say, God did not create us all equal. He's a guy with a chin of iron, I tell you.
Well, that shot he took in the first round from Tommy Hearns. I mean, that guy took down an elephant.
That's right.
It's funny, I was watching the first round of that fight today, and it was interesting how the announcers kept saying that Hagler was hurt, and he wasn't acting like he was hurt.
Yeah,
always competitive. Anybody ever said, what is the best fight you've ever seen?
Shaking balls that didn't belong to the neighborhood kids.
Well,
and they'd stick them on somebody every time they'd need to, you know, get somebody off their back. They'd say, hey, they called you a dumb wop or something.
Yeah.
A goomba.
Maybe I'm all over. I mean, the thing is, as a trainer, he broke every rule of the book. He started, he was 25 years old when he started. That's too old to start, you know that.
Not anymore, not these days, but back then it was.
The guy was too small for him. He weighed 183 pounds.
Oh, there'll never be a champion that way.
I mean, he's a guy like, oh, what can you say? Hey, you know, forget it, you know, he's a pretty fuck anyway. Yeah.
article I read about a year ago about Mike Tyson. And, for a while I was doing focus on the event where I would match two players from different eras, similar to when Rocky and Ali, when they had the computer fight next to them. What I was doing was I would just take the two fighters and I would get back to their strengths and weaknesses, and then I would write an article on how I think the fight would turn out. My one piece that I have on there is Rocky Marciano versus Jack Dempsey, which I thought would be high.
Larry's on there as the guest of honor. He would come there and he would sign a couple boxes of favorite black. cars. Oh, this is generous. I snap one. I said, you know what? This would be nice. I'm not a good night on the street. Never had that. But I said, you know, it'd be nice to get my scrapbook, so let me do it. So I go up to him, and he was very cordial to my neighbor and my neighbor's brother. And I go up to him, and I said, Mr. Collins, can I get a picture of me? And he, like, sneers at me and goes, make it quick. What an arrogant. And then we took the picture. This is before you can have a digital camera, you know. I developed the photos about a day or two later, and what am I wearing in the photos? The Rocky Marciano t-shirt. Well, it was not planned. I'm going to take that. Don't go to Dr. Madge. I'm going to wear a shirt with a boxer or lightning. Yes. So, you know, you don't have to agree about that.
No, definitely not. I actually, It's funny, I hate to admit it sometimes, but I got beat when I was a little kid by a girl named Sinead O'Connor. Her mother was in the Irish Republican Army.
Okay.
Yeah, toughest girl I ever saw. And it wasn't even a real fight. I mean, I didn't go after her trying to hurt her. I just was, like, trying to wrestle her. And she just grabbed me by the wrist and threw me around and across the sandbox. Like, forget about it. Yeah, right. You know, some girls, you know, you got to watch out for. They have a certain background or environment they grew up in and they've been messed with, and they don't want to ever have that happen again, so they get tough, you know. Yeah, I wouldn't admit it. I don't usually admit it, but I was young. I had an excuse.
She was young, too.
Yeah, she was young, too. She's a little taller than me, but, same age, so yeah, I guess they don't have an excuse now that you put it that way.
Well, you'll be talking about the which is stuff you guys have on the mixed martial arts, and as a trainer, I mean, I'm sure you're probably going to want to reach through the phone to be a black jacket in my hand to it, just because I have to hear this. And I was going to say, a martial arts center not far from where I live now.
Now, when a kid throws comes in the door, what do you usually have them do their first day when they come in?
Well, it feels like I have to go to the physician down and talk to them. I have to go to my assistant trainer there, you know, like just what they want to do, you know, what do they want to find, you know. And we don't just get kids in here that just want to keep them to move around, but they even live out of box, you know, they sit down and talk to them. And,
every year for Christmas, you know, my dad being a big Rocky fan, I don't remember what
where I found it. I found it online somewhere, but a guy had about 8 or 9 full flights, not just the highlights, but the full flights, the full Worldcon flight, you know, the full Worldcon flight, the boat, I think, has a Charles flight, the Oxymore flight, and they got on DVD, so I had a surprise. Merry Christmas. I said, let's sit down and watch some flights today. And that's what we did all Christmas Day. We watched the last day of the flight. And he said that he goes, I never got to see the whole flight with Worldcon. I only got to see, you know, the first round knocked down, and then, you know, they went straight up a little, you know, exchange here, a little exchange there, and obviously the 13th round of the big knockdown.
Yeah, Rudy, you described it perfectly after I watched it the first time. I mean, they, he was getting his ass kicked.
Okay,
well, amazing characteristic about him, that he was just, he did what he had to do to win. And
yeah, I'm looking up on the wall,
man, made
that Rocky
Walk-up
table,
and all
kinds of
like,
hit
it
with that straight way
down. I couldn't get over how many different angles of that punch are in Georgia's, you know, all different perspectives. Like, amazing. Really makes you appreciate that era as far as, you know, the newspaper industry and how popular it was. I'll never forget the first time I saw that movie, Road to Perdition, and they show the train station, and every single person in the train station is reading a newspaper. And, you know, of course, nowadays you have the newspaper dying out, you know, and it's a whole different era. And back then, you know, the money shot was the knockout punch against that front page picture. And you can imagine how many different sports outlets were there and newspapers and trying to get jockey for that shot. And you could see in every match back then how many photographers were, you know, just looking for elbow room to get their cameras up there. And, you know, just the process back then was so much different. And actually, as much as the digital technology is catching up with 35mm, they still say 35mm is the best way to go. It creates the best quality picture. And even in black and white days, I think that was true.
Yeah.
It was just some incredible pictures you couldn't get with a digital camera today. Tell us a little bit about, you know, why you do what you do, Rudy. Like, you know, what over the years have you enjoyed most about, you know, teaching people fighting?
That's what I've done since I was 10, 11 years old. I come from a family of 12, 5 girls and 7 boys, and you had to be tough in order to survive. So when I was only a young kid, 10, 11 years old, I was in the gym. Some kids take up football, baseball, you name it, you know, basketball, but I get into boxing when I was a young kid. And, I did my share. I bought a gym, went pro, I was in the Navy, retired out of the Navy, out of the Navy, I boxed in the Navy, Marine boxing teams. And when I get too old to box, I trained. And that's been my life, you know, and I guess, practice in the boxing room, my brother Pat, I've had good luck with it. I'm looking for hard work. And Ivan Angle, the champion, and I get Drake Dasty, who is the one he changed Tony's the later week out of the world. And Steve Collins, who I had since day one in the pros, he won the title throughout
cut off, huh?
Yeah, I don't know what happened. But I was saying, you know, I'd rather go back to your gym than go to Stoughton, I guess. Tony Petronelli wants me to go down there to Stoughton and work with Timmy and his guy, Timmy Slaymore.
Oh,
okay. Yeah. But what's that been like working with, you know, your whole family in boxing? I know Lujuva gave us some perspective about that. He said that was the best thing about, you know, doing what he did.
Oh, great trainer. Shows.
going, but there was a program in Dorchester at the McKeon Post.
Yeah, that's right.
You never see enough of that stuff.
No,
you gotta. Little 5-year-old kids, though, I remember. Bailey could put on the gloves if they were fighting every weekend.
Yeah. Which is good, you know, that McKeon would get a picture of the box exhibition, and, you know, they need more of that. They don't have enough of it. They're back in debt right now.
Yeah, so for sure.
Yeah, one thing I really like about, as we're talking about locals, is locals, they really have a flavor to get fans into it more. And I know a very good friend of mine, I've never been to a pro fight, and a couple years ago I took him to a fight in Atlantic City. It was an Arturo Gatti fight. He was in Atlantic City, and it was my friend's first fight. He really got into this atmosphere because everybody was chanting Gatti, and, you know, and he looked so great. And I said, Mike, if you really want to have a good time, I said, come with me to a local show. And I said, and you're going to really get a good flavor of what boxing's all about. So last year, you know, there was a card only about 20 minutes from where we go live. So I said, Joe, let's go there. And we went there, and the one trainer I was talking about, used to work with Najisar Muhammad, he was there. When he saw me, he came over. And it was like, all my friends are sitting there. I'm like, hey, there's one of his trainers right there. And he introduced me to these guys, and these guys are really impressed. Then there was a young local fighter who was like on his way up. And this young man that just knocked out Tommy Harris' son. That's a Harry Brooks. And Harry and I have been friends for about 5 years. He came over and he signed autographs for all my friends. They thought that was great, you know, they were really getting, you know, they felt more interactive. They felt more like they were part of the show because they were so people. I play a lot of fights in Philadelphia because I love the sport so much.
Yeah.
And we were in a local card about 2 years ago, and one main event fighter was a friend of mine, and Anthony Clarkson, when he came out, he was just shaking hands and talking with us and signing autographs and taking photos. And the people sitting around me, they had never been to a card before. And so I told me that, and I said, okay, so I said, you've never been to a professional card before? No. I said, well, all right. One fighter got out of the ring, I was doing the high sign. He came over to see me, and I said, hey, listen, do me a favor, sign some autographs, and it's right here. And that's, these people went in there and loved it. I was there one time, my 2 little 9-year-old kids, their father. And, you know, I said, hey, you guys want to meet some of the fighters? Yeah, like, these kids were wide-eyed, like, you know, it was beautiful. And I remember the guy emailed me about a day or two later, and he said, you know what, he goes, I really want to thank you for being, you know, nice to my son and his friend, and letting them meet some of the guys. And he goes, I got 2, you know, obsessed fans of me now, and they're asking when they can go again. I said, well, I'm like, hey, if I can pass the sport of boxing on to somebody, I said, that's, you know, a positive to me. You know, every fan I can build out there is going to grow up to be a big fan.
Yeah.
Very good. Yeah. And I don't fight much anymore. I still work out all the time, and if anybody ever wants to come work out with me, I have a small gym in my basement. I said, listen, you don't have to pay gym fees. Come work with me, and so I can teach you a lot. And the one thing that's really been important to me is from working with people that are a little bit younger. I did this when I was in South Philadelphia at the One Rec Center. The young guys who come to the gym, you know, and a lot of times they felt out of place, so I would talk to them. Because I knew what it was like to be a young kid that looking for a place to fit in, you know. When I was growing up, I wasn't a great athlete. I couldn't play baseball. I wasn't good at football. And I wanted to fit in. So for me, I'm trying so hard to fit in. I was getting in fights on the street, you know, because I wanted people to notice who I was and that I was somebody important. Thinking about it, you know, 15 years later, what a knucklehead I was. But I'm never 16, 17 years old. You want people to notice you. And I remember I went, you know, started working out in the gym, and I started, you know, getting pretty decent, and I was sparring, and I was feeling pretty good. And I said, you know what, listen, then I was fighting in the ring, and I felt really good, and people were cheering me, and I would be on the college campus, and, you know, people would be, hey, I saw your fights, you did really good. And I was like, you know what, this is a good feeling. I said, I don't need to prove myself to anybody anymore. I said, because I'm working hard, and I really enjoy that.
talking about how just fighters in general, they get that stereotypical outlook that people have about a fighter, you know, they find out that you're a fighter and they just think you're some big, tough brute, you know, but there's been a lot of smart fighters, you know, in history, and, you know, one thing that, you know, always stood out for me about, the misconceptions of fighters, and, you know, it was kind of cool for me in college when I boxed, because when people would find out that I was a boxer, it would just, you know, not so much think I was dumb, but just think that they would have to be afraid of me. And I was the nicest guy outside the ring, but, you know, they'd be intimidated just by the fact that I was a boxer. I didn't have to be good. They find out, well, he's a boxer, don't mess with him. So, no, I always loved that, you know.
Right.
Well, I kind of complain every now and then to Tony. He doesn't like to hear it, but, you know, when we were in college, there was only like maybe 12 or 15 other colleges that had boxing. So, I mean, it was a real...
35.
Oh, there's 35. All right, sorry. But it always felt to me like it wasn't, you know, there was a lot less. There obviously was a lot less than other intercollegiate sports. You know, it's not an NCAA sport. It's a club sport at a lot of schools. You know, I always felt like it was kind of not a cheap, you know, thing to have. You know, I get a bronze medal in the Nationals, so any time I ever told anybody about that, they'd be like, you're awesome, you know, and I always thought, well, you know, I'm not that great. You know, I always qualify if I say, hey, it was just college boxing, not every college has boxing. And I'm still proud of it, but, you know, it's nothing like being a pro.
Doing the show together.
Lester almost had a no-hitter.
Almost had a no-hitter, yeah.
Not only a no-hitter, but a perfect game he had for a while.
That's a perfect game,
yeah. Tony Tonko
was the perfect game in the majors today. Did you hear about that?
No.
Mark Bartley from the Chicago White Sox had a perfect game.
What did he
do? No hitter, no walks, no at-bats. Perfect. And he almost lost in the ninth inning. A guy hit a shot that would have been a home run, which obviously would have been the perfect game, the no-hitter in the shutout. And one of the outfielders dove and caught it over the wall.
Awesome.
Wow.
Yeah, I have to watch baseball tonight now.
So one more thing I want to say, before we get off the tonight and then, one of my proudest moments of a fighter, I want to go back to 1996. There was a young Philadelphia, he was a very highly respected amateur, and he went to the Olympic trials in 1992, the same year Oscar De La Hoya won the gold medal. And was playing Rafferty, and then after he didn't, advance to the Olympics, he turned pro and had 6 or 7 fights, and then he was getting out of it, and he was looking to go to college. Now, obviously, he couldn't box in college, because he had way too many amateurs. To box in college, you really weren't supposed to have, more than 4 or 5 amateur fights to start, and obviously, no professional fights. So, he was just going up there, so they figured I would be his tour guide, and he came up to the front weekend that we were having our big annual boxing show. And so I go there, and I was learning my ropes, but I was still a very crude fighter, very, very strong, very aggressive, still a lot of hooks, still on the boxing skills down, and still didn't slip a lot of punches. So I went in there against this, we're talking, we just went tooth and nail for 3 rounds. I mean, it was a battle, and I got super. And Mike was talking to one judge afterwards, who's also a writer for Ring Magazine. He goes, awesome. He gave me that PayPal fight. He goes, I didn't think too much of it. He goes, I'm not very impressed with him. He goes, well, he's lost. And this judge had never been a big fan of mine until Mike Rafferty talked to him. Mike said, JR, are you kidding me? He goes, what did you see tonight? He goes, what you saw was a little Marciano in that ring. Look at the way he hit the body. Look at the way he kept coming. Look at the way he walked through those punches. And he just kept praising me and calling me a little Marciano. And therefore, that was a compliment that I could only aspire to ever be 1/1,000,000th of what Rocky was. But you that guy compared me, that was, just high praise for me. And also, that judge around, that judge ended up becoming a fan of mine. And then a friend of mine, we still meet at the Lloyd's Auditorium a month ago. I was hanging out with him in a flight car, and he was BSing. And now I still sell whenever I write articles, I have a little fan. We're friends, we're colleagues, and so we're good lovers in the flight game. Because Mike Bradley said I reminded him of Rocky Marciano.
Goody saw my attempt at a Rocky Marciano right, and he said it's nothing like it, I heard. So, I got a lot of work to do, right, Goody?
Okay,
well, I'll be up there, I'll be seeing you. We're going to come to get you some more publicity up there, and
okay.
We can't get you some more fighters. We're going to put together some YouTube videos.
Yeah,
get up there and get myself into shape. It'll be an adventure for everybody. You can watch me as I do it and get everything on Twitter and all that fancy stuff for you.
Okay.
All right. So I'll probably see you next Monday.
Yeah, nice talking to you.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
Have a good night. Wow. That was a hell of an interview.
Yeah,
we covered so many bases.
Else.
I know, right? I'm trying to get through the thing. I think Tony told every story you've ever told twice.
Oh. Well, stories.
All right. That looks like a repeat of a little doer thing for a little while.
Right.
All right. Anyway, there's not too much else going on. I mean, first item on the agenda. agenda for the boxing schedule is speaking of old guys, you know, me and Goody included. We got Friends of Quendo, heavyweight fight, fighting Bruce Seldon, your favorite guy to talk bad about. Bruce is 40-7, Bruce is, with 36 knockouts, and Fred is only got 19 knockouts, at 30 wins and 5 losses. And,
you got it, I know, I'll mark up 2 rounds, stop doing 3 rounds.
Yeah, it looks like, 1 loss, there's nothing else on that card worth watching either. I think we have to go to, Argentina on Saturday. This is a title fight, I don't know. Not seeing much of anything. Patrick Hyland is fighting again. He's a guy who fought in Dorchester here not too long ago. He was the main event.
What's big fights going on this weekend?
Patrick and Eddie and Paul Hyland. 3 Hylands on 1 freaking card over in Dublin. Patrick is 16-0 with 8 knockouts, and he's fighting Abdu Tebazawa, who's 12-5 with 10 knockouts. This is for the Vegan IBF featherweight title, and the super featherweight title is on the line between Oisin Fagan and Eddie Hyland, also on that card. That's a super featherweight. And then Paul, the third brother, Paul Hyland, is fighting Robert Nelson, who's 7-2. So there you have it for that one. Over in Macedonia, there's an interesting cruiserweight fight, 8 rounder between Nuri Safiri, 23-6 with 16 knockouts, versus Joseph Nagy, 21-4 with 14 knockouts. What do you do? HBO pay-per-view, we got on this Saturday down in Nayarit, Mexico. We have the world light flyweight title on the line between Giovanni Segura, 20-1 with 16 knockouts, 1 draw, and Juanito Rubiar, 46-12 with 7 draws and 22 knockouts. That's a hell of a record for a light flyweight. Then we have Urban and Tion on the co-main event, 12-round lightweight fight. 26-0 with 19 knockouts versus Miguel Acosta, 25-3 with 19 knockouts. Interim WBA World Lightweight title online there. And this is a great card all around. Everybody's very well matched, it looks like. We also have another super flyweight fight. 29-5, Juan Alberto Rosas, I don't know. Rosas. Rosas, 29-5 with 25 knockouts versus Alejandro Martinez, 16-1 with 11 knockouts. And then you have another, all lightweight guys here, but phenomenal matchup here. Hernan Marquez, 24-0 with 18 knockouts versus Juan Esker, 25-5 with 19 knockouts. And then we got a guy, 30-3, Sam Peter. What? What is Sam Peter doing at the bottom of a card?
Wow.
Samuel Peter, 8-round heavyweight fight, 30-3 with 23 knockouts versus Marcus McGee, 22-16. So he's related to fighting some guy named McGee. What is going on there?
I had heard, okay, I'll see it now. And I had heard that Peter had just signed like an emotional deal. I didn't know he was fighting this weekend.
I'm like, is that the same guy? Why is he fighting an 8-rounder?
I don't know. I mean, maybe he's trying to build his career back up. I mean, maybe it's also a chance to maybe get him a fight, maybe help him get his weight down. I mean, he figured his last fight was 265, which was by far the heaviest of his career. And he didn't look to be easy. He lost his last 2 fights. He didn't really get impressed. I mean, he got a nasty fight with Cali Cisco.
Hopefully, an 8-rounder fight, that's weird too, for him to go backwards like that.
Right, but sometimes you gotta do it. Sometimes, you know, you gotta take what you can get, take a lower rank on a car, and take short money, you know, to get a opponent, you know, like an obscure car, and build yourself up.
Alright, I found the mismatch of the week already. And it's coming from North Carolina, Greensboro. And I've seen this kid fight, unfortunately. It's probably the worst fight I've ever seen. But he's 12-16. I don't even know why this kid keeps fighting. He's got 4 knockouts to his credit, somehow, and 9 knockout losses and 4 draws. Jimmy LeBlanc is fighting a guy named Jimmy Lang at light middleweight. And Jimmy Lang.
Okay.
drunk. And it's designed to make you think only about, well, not only, but, you know, primarily during the run, you think about Floyd Mayweather's most asinine comment ever, that white guys can't box, that there's no white guys dominating the sport. Well, listen, buddy, the reason you've got to come back and make money for yourself is because, and really put all this spotlight on the sport, and I think he's, you know, he's legitimately, you know, coming back, obviously, not just to make money, but to, you know,
enhance his legacy,
build the Mayweather brand, as he said, and also because he's got to feel some kind of pressure, you know, to represent boxing, or else he wouldn't be saying these outrageous things about MMA and stirring up that debate again. But the dumbest thing he could have ever said is, this is not racist, but then he says this, he goes, you know, there's no white fighters dominating in the sport today. It would have been one thing if he said it in his division, because then he would have been right. But, I mean, look, at the reason why he's coming back and the reason why the welterweights are the new heavyweights is because there's, you know, a few Americans in the mix. He's one of them. And the heavyweights are all white Russians. So to say that there's no white guys dominating in the sport, I mean, the reason you're making big bucks is because there's white guys dominating in the sport. And it's that heavyweight, you know, whereas, you know, the black American heavyweights that, like Tyson and even Rockman, who was, you know, a little while the last line of defense, they called him.
Yeah.
Those guys can't box. So, fuck you, Floyd Mayweather.
But,
Friday Night Fights, when they were talking about that this last week, they on there for a couple of minutes talking about that and how he's not signing any fights, you know, he's got to focus on making that happen or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's kind of interesting.
Well, yeah, the big fight they wanted was, I remember when I think saying, okay, how would you destroy war with the photos on the
last name, but they're still going to get divorced. I don't know how you do that. It's kind of weird. Jeremy Piven. It's a little wrestling news from Entourage now, I guess this is the most famous thing going on. He's going to be on wrestling. He's going to star in a wrestling match.
Oh, lovely.
I don't know whether he's going to be the guest referee or what's going on, but it's all over the wrestling airwaves. Let's see. He's going to be on WWE Raw. All right, well, no. I do want to say that we had a great interview there with Goody, and we're going to try to get him some more candidates. And you know, it's kind of interesting. There was an article that I read before we talked to him, and I mentioned it partly, but I didn't mention the end of it, where he was looking out the window, and the reporter quoted him as saying, "You know, you never know when there's another champion." And he's always got that attitude, and great guy, and you can tell he loves boxing, loves the sport, and you know, really cares about the kids coming up, so more power to him, and I'm going to hopefully do a lot to help him get there and get that next kid.
Yeah.
Before we get out of here.